So let's talk a little bit about Amalek and Haman. 616. Okay, thank you. Okay, every word in Parsha Zohar is iconic. And it's a very short Parsha, three psukim. Of course, everyone, api halacha, has to listen carefully, be quiet, have kavanah to be yotze mitzvah deraisa. This is a mitzvah of deraisa, so you have to really listen carefully, bear in, not talk, have a chumash open. One of the words that contains the code for Amalek and why they're the enemies of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the enemies of the Jewish people, ki yadol keis ka, until Amalek is eliminated, the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is constrained in this world. Part of that code is captured in the word baderach, asher karcha baderach. A lot of people pay attention to the word karcha. Rashi has a famous pshat that they cooled us down, we were the hot item, it was afraid of us. Other ideas are that they happened to just incidentally attack us. There was no plan, no rhyme, no reason. The word derech, though, which literally means on the road, and the road meant we were in the desert, we were helpless and vulnerable, but we were also on the road to somewhere else. We were on the road to Eretz Yisrael. And what does this mean? What does Amalek have to do with this? So let's go all the way back to the seed of the dispute between Am Yisrael and Amalek. The seed of the dispute, a lot of people don't get this, begins in Parshas Toldos. It's not that Amalek all of a sudden had this death wish against the Jewish people as a genocidal effect. In Parshas Toldos, Yaakov becomes the Bechor, and he takes it from Esav. Vayakveni zeh pamayim. He takes it once with the story of the Adom, Adom, Azeh. Remember, Edom comes from Amalek. Esav's nickname is Edom. Adom, Adom, Azeh. And then he takes it again in the scene with the brachos when Rivka engineers Yaakov receiving the brachos. Now, obviously, Esav didn't take this lying down. Esav is good and angry. We see this in the end of Parshas Toldos. He plans Yaakov's execution. Yaakov runs away. He then accosts Yaakov in Parshas Vayishlach with 400 people. And for some reason, there's a rapprochement, there's an armistice, but there's still some very, very sore wounds. Chazal tells us that Esav actually shows up at the Maris Machpelah, because whoever gets buried in Maris Machpelah will be the Bechor. But Esav hasn't given up. Esav still wants to recover the Bechor. And he's there, Maris Machpelah, to try to prevent Yaakov from assuming the title of Bechor. And what happened when Esav died? Who took over from Esav? So Eliphaz was Esav's son. Eliphaz had a Pelegesh, who may have also been his mother, it's not clear, because there's a lot of incest in the family of Esav. But his Pelegesh was known as Timna. Timna was a princess from one of the local cultures who desperately wanted to become a ger. Chazal tell us she tried to become a ger on several occasions, and for whatever reason, Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov, it sounds like three times, but she was consistently rejected. And this really, really irritated her. Why is she being rejected? We don't really know why she was rejected, but she was rejected. So she decided she's going to get back at Avram. And the way she got back at Avram is she told her child, with Eliphaz, her half-husband, for whom she was a Pelegesh, she told her child on her deathbed, I want you, the Medrash says, to be the one that takes up the battle of Esav, my father-in-law. Because she married Eliphaz ben Esav. What was the name of this child between Timna and Eliphaz? The name of this child was Amalek. Amalek was Esav's anakel, Esav's grandson. It was a grandson to Amalek, to Timna and Eliphaz. So Amalek takes over from Esav this battle and struggle to prevent Am Yisrael from assuming the Bechor. And this is why Amalek attacks us in the desert, because we've just been chosen, we're about to receive the Torah, and we're about to enter Eretz Yisrael. This is the time to attack. They don't need to attack us in Mitzrayim. They don't need to attack us in Parshas Vayechi. We're not assuming Jewish destiny. But when we get closer to Jewish destiny, when we get closer to fulfilling and actualizing the Bechor, Amalek and their descendants have to step in. Asher karcha baderech. As we're on the way to Eretz Yisrael, and on the way to the Bechor, Amalek has to stop and prevent us. And they don't just stop and prevent us in Eretz Yisrael. According to the Masara, it's because of Amalek's intervention that we sinned at the Egel. And because of Amalek's intervention, because of the head of the Egel, Golus became a reality, and we were meant to enter Eretz Yisrael and usher in Utopia. History was supposed to last 11 days. We receive the Torah at Har Sinai. It takes us 11 days to walk into Eretz Yisrael. We arrive. We beat the local warlords, the local paganists, and then Utopia, and then Mashiach. The Egel sidetracked that. Because of the Echad Egel, history reverted to Plan B. And Plan B was much more circuitous and much more tortured and much more elongated than the original plan of history. We don't realize that we failed the plan of history and that Chet Egel sidetracked history. So Amalek really throws a wrench into Am Yisrael's destiny. What's the next time that Amalek battles with Am Yisrael? We don't really see Amalek initiating this battle, but there's a battle, and obviously the armies are assembled. Right as we're inching closer to Jewish dynasty, the Jewish monarchy, when Shaul is appointed king. Oh, until the Jews have a king, they're far away from Melucha, they're far away from Bechorah, they're far away from Beis HaMikdash. So Amalek can take it easy. Amalek doesn't have to enter the fray. But once we appoint Shaul, and again, we know that Shaul wasn't the ultimate king, but we're now inching closer to monarchy. The concept of monarchy has been normalized. Now Amalek has to battle us, because if they get monarchy, they're one step closer to seizing the Bechorah. They're Baderach. Every time we're Baderach, Amalek has to step in and prevent us. And then the next time that Amalek, where is Amalek all those hundreds of years? They didn't have to because we were deteriorating. We were falling apart. Now we're in Chutz Laaretz, and it's towards the end of 70 years, and we're in Persia, but we're starting to build the Beis HaMikdash, and we're starting to return to Eretz Yisrael, and Haman says, I have to stop this. Haman HaGagi says, I have to enter because they are Baderach, because they're closer, and they're getting closer to Jewish destiny, so I have to follow the heritage of Amalek, not just to wantonly and arbitrarily attack the Jews at any moment. But every time we inch closer to Jewish destiny, Amalek, genealogical Amalek, or the forces of Amalek in the modern period have to prevent that advance. And I'll talk a little bit about what I mean by the forces of Amalek in a few minutes if I have some time. But that's why when we talk about the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, being Amalek, or Hamas, Yimach Shemam, being Amalek, they're not genealogical Amalek. We probably don't even know who genealogical Amalek is because after Sancheirov in the year 586 relocated all the populations and dispersed them, Chazal say, we don't really know. We knew Haman was an Amalek because he lived about 100 years after Sancheirov. So he still knew who his Zaidi was. He could still trace himself back to Agag like you can trace yourself back to your grandparents and great-grandparents. But today, 2,500 years later, we don't really know who genealogical Amalek is, and that's why the mitzvah to go kill an Amaleki doesn't apply. But, as we'll see in a few moments, Amalek is a force in history that gets seeded, S-E-E-D-E-D, and that's why as we forming our state and we're getting closer to statehood and closer to the beginning of the final chapter of history and closer to settling ourselves in Eretz Yisrael, the forces of Amalek, that's why we refer to Hitler, Yimach Shem Hazah, not just because they're pure evil. Amalek doesn't mean pure evil. Amalek means anytime either genealogical Amalek or the spiritual descendants of Amalek step in to thwart the advance of Jewish destiny. And it happens at particular periods in time. The Spanish Inquisition was not Amalek, because we were stuck in Galus. We had a great period in Spain, but we weren't any closer to Jewish destiny. It's when we're Baderach to Eretz Yisrael, Baderach to monarchy, Baderach to go back and build the Beis HaMikdash, Baderach to have our state in the end of history, Baderach to settle our land to secure our borders, that Amalek raises its head. Now, when I say the force of Amalek, what do I mean the force of Amalek? You're seeing Amalek transition from a people and a race and an ethnicity into a force in Megillas Esther. Haman is an Amaleki. Ahasuerus is not an Amaleki. Ahasuerus is a Persian. For the first time, this is a major shift in the history of Amalek. For the first time in Megillas Esther, you're seeing Amalek take a different strategy because they know that they're being, you know, withering away. There is no nation called Amalek. So instead of battling the Jewish people, they are prostituting, exploiting, manipulating other forces, seeding other forces, in this case the Persian Empire, the Achashranim, the Ramachim, the Pachos, the Sarim, the Malachim, to try to attack the Jewish people. And this is where Amalek shifts its strategy, and Amalek shifts from being a people that are attacking and opposing Jewish destiny to being a force that poisons and infiltrates other cultures, other nations, other cultural narratives, and weaponizes them against the Jewish people. This is already prophesied in a Ramban. The Ramban believes, the Medrash says that the four kings who battled Avram in Parshas Lech Lecha, each of them represent the four empires. And the fourth king is Sid O Melech Goyim. He didn't have a particular nation like the other three kings. He was the king of many nations. The Medrash says that's Rome. So Rome is the last remnant of genealogical Amalek. Rome is the last remnant of Edom. And based on Haman's cue, remember Rome and Haman come from the same stock. Haman starts the process whereby he's infiltrating other empires and other cultures, and then Rome continues. So when we call this Gallus Romi, we haven't seen Romans in 2,000 years, in 1,800 years. But because Rome dominated Western civilization, and because Rome launched Christianity when they became Christian, so that model where Amalek has shluchim and secondary agents to fulfill their task was first set by Haman in 486, and then was adopted by Rome in the next 400, 500 years, and then Amalek transformed from being a people into being a concept that infiltrates. So when you see today the Israel bashers adopting cultural narratives, colonialism, adopting cultural narratives, genocide, adopting cultural narratives, left-wing liberalism, this is Amalek. This is Amalek's second plan. Instead of opposing us on the battlefield with their soldiers against our soldiers, Haman launched that model where Amalek is infiltrating empires, infiltrating other kings, infiltrating cultures, and weaponizing kings, empires, and cultures to do their dirty work against Am Yisrael. And Rome takes Haman's model and amplifies it. And then it's not just Haman and Malach Paras, it's Rome and the entire world that Western civilization that Rome conquered, culturally shifted, religiously infused with Roman culture, Roman ideas, and ultimately Roman Catholicism. This becomes the forces of Amalek. So this is the short survey of Amalek history. They always challenge us baderech. The first couple challenges baderech were their people and their soldiers. The more recent challenges baderech were they're infiltrating the spirit or the people or the kingdoms and using them to weaponize against them. And that model was first set by Tidal Melech Goyim. He wasn't an Amaleki, obviously he comes before Esav. But the model of having many nations that you can muster against, rather than one nation, but take many nations and many, like an alliance or an axis, and muster it against your enemy. And then that became the model for Haman to employ as he realized that Amalek was fading, and that became the new force of Rome, which is why we call it Galus Romi. Okay, if you want to see this, look at the Ramban in Parshas Lech Lecha. He talks about Rome being parallel to Melech Goyim and Rome's ability to infiltrate and poison other nations, other cultures, and in this case, other cultural narratives. Okay? Have an easy fast. Tomorrow morning we'll complete our Purim sessions, okay, after davening.
Thank you.
You're welcome.